Today's show is sponsored by Talkspace, the online therapy company. For a fraction of the price of traditional therapy, you can pick an experienced, licensed therapist you relate to and feel comfortable with. Each and every therapist has at least a master's degree and has completed over 3,000 hours of supervised work. To match with your perfect therapist, go to Talkspace.com/boom. And to show your support for this podcast, use code BOOM to get $30 off your first month. That's BOOM, Talkspace.com/boom, B-O-O-M.
You are Locked On Broncos, your daily podcast on the Denver Broncos, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
And the Denver Broncos have taken Super Bowl 50.
That's right. You are Locked On Broncos, and it is time to drop some knowledge. I am Chad Jensen, the publisher of MileHighHuddle.com, part of Scout Media. And with me is my co-host, Luke Polglaze, a semi-pro football coach and NFL draft analyst. Luke, are you ready to kick off a new week with some absolutely compelling Broncos talk?
Absolutely. Wouldn't want to be anywhere else.
We are committed to bringing you a daily podcast focused entirely on your Denver Broncos, and at least 5 days a week. And we received a few questions about this over the weekend. We mostly stick to the weekdays, Monday through Friday, so that's why you didn't hear us talking or publishing any episodes over the weekend. But we're here now, and we're not here to just report the news. We're here to do a deep dive on your favorite team, so help us out. Share the episodes on Facebook, retweet them on Twitter, and go check out our work over at MileHighHuddle.com. We have exclusive premium Broncos content, more deep dive stuff for the Broncoholics out there. Our subscribers get 10% off on tickets and 10% off on Broncos team merchandise through Fanatics, so go check that out. Follow the show on Twitter, at Locked On Broncos. We really need each listener to just take a quick second and help us out. Find at Locked On Broncos and click the follow button. And, of course, the home of Locked On Broncos is Audio Boom, but make sure to subscribe also on iTunes. And if you are an Android user, you want to check out Stitcher. Great podcast app. Another season's in the books. We've got the coaching hires, free agency coming, the draft. You're not going to want to miss a single episode. Now, a lot has happened since last we spoke on Friday. And let's start, obviously, with the Broncos coaching hires on the offensive side of the ball. And it was quite the coup. First, John Elway and Vance Joseph went out and targeted Mike McCoy. They sealed the deal. He's returning to the Mile High City. Now, McCoy, you know, he has 17 seasons of NFL coaching experience. He's entering his fifth as the Broncos offensive coordinator after previously serving in that role from 2009 to 2012. You know, he spent 4 seasons as the head coach of the San Diego Chargers, of course. And he also worked 9 years on the offensive staff with the Carolina Panthers from 2000 to 2008. McCoy's offenses, if you look at them, finished in the NFL's top 10 in 3 of the past 5 seasons. They averaged close to 375 yards per game during that stretch. And he's coached 8 offensive players to a total of 10 Pro Bowl selections during his NFL career while working with quarterbacks who have totaled 10 3,000-yard passing seasons, including 5 4,000-yard seasons. So do you think that sounds like a good fit for Paxton Lynch, Luke? I mean, give us your gut reaction to the McCoy hire before we talk about the next guy.
Right. Well, I think this is a great hire for several reasons. First of all, McCoy knows the organizational culture in Denver, if not necessarily the offensive personnel he's going to have. I mean, he has just 2 players on that side of the ball in Demaryius Thomas and Virgil Green, who are holdovers from his time in Denver. So it's going to be new faces for him almost exclusively. But he knows the culture of the organization, and I think that is very important. Now, what I'm really excited about is what he does with his players. And this is a guy who's willing to adapt to the players he's given and kind of scheme around their strengths and weaknesses. We saw this happen a couple of years ago with Tim Tebow in a very obvious way. But even if you go back, to the Manning season, he adapted to that offense. Kyle Orton, he kind of built in around that. So, you know, he's a guy who's not against adapting to who he has to maximize their strengths.
Absolutely. Great hire. And obviously the guy that was at the top of John Elway and Vance Joseph's list there. Now, next up, you know, we knew the Broncos had 2 interviews scheduled with a couple of prospective offensive coordinators, and we talked about the possibility of the Broncos getting both of them. And, of course, Mile High Huddle analyst Eric Trickle said all along that that was actually in the cards. Well, the Broncos hired both of them. I mean, against all odds, Elway and company managed to convince Bill Musgrave to take a job as quarterback's coach despite being in demand around the league as a coordinator. They were able to seal the deal and entice him into accepting their offer, basically by making Musgrave the assistant head coach to Vance Joseph. Now, check out Musgrave's resume. He's a former NFL QB, of course, including time spent as John Elway's backup in Denver. As an NFL coach, he has helped four different quarterbacks to Pro Bowl seasons. You got Derek Carr, Matt Ryan, Michael Vick, and even Steve Berline, going all the way back to 1999. He was hired as Oakland's offensive coordinator in 2015, which was Derek Carr's second season, wasn't it, Luke? He was a 14-second rounder, if I recall right.
Yep, correct.
Musgrave then inherited an offense at the time that ranked last in the NFL in total offense and 31st in scoring. Then the Raiders made the biggest offensive improvement in the NFL in yards per game and scoring in two seasons under Musgrave. They finished in the top seven in the league in both categories in 2016. Now, the Raiders, that resurgence we saw offensively was really spurred by Derek Carr turning the corner, the development of Derek Carr, who in two seasons in Musgrave's offense passed for nearly 8,000 yards to go along with 60 touchdowns. He's an MVP candidate in 2016. And, of course, while he was still healthy before he got hurt in Week 16, the Raiders were one of just three NFL offenses to rank in the top 10 in both passing and rushing. So it's quite the track record there, Luke, and an exciting opportunity when you think about Denver's two young quarterbacks on the roster.
Right, and I think that what's really exciting about this is the amount of different quarterbacks he's worked with to find success. I mean, if you look at Michael Vick and Matt Ryan, those are about polar opposites as quarterbacks. I mean, Matt Ryan, in terms of mobility, Matt Ryan's a statue in the pocket. Michael Vick is anything but.
Right.
So for him to find that much success with that, those kind of different types of quarterbacks, I think is a huge point in his favor, that he's able to refine them and get them to create within the structure of an offense. Now, what he's done with Derek Carr over the last couple seasons really should not be discounted. I think his development has been really kind of superb and underrated over the last few years. So for Musgrave to come in and get a shot to work with the quarterbacks, that's a plus. I don't love, as I've said, what he's done with other position groups. I think he, you know, gets a little bit in his head about what he wants to do with guys and, you know, true athletes he's just never sure how to use, you know, see Cordarrelle Patterson in Minnesota. But for him to come in and just be working on the quarterbacks, I think is a great get for Denver.
Yeah, and it'll also be interesting the implications these two hires have on the type of system, of course, the Broncos roll out. Because, you know, McCoy's, he's more of a chameleon in that respect, but Musgrave's an old West Coast offense guy, just like Gary Kubiak. So it'll be interesting to see how they blend their philosophies together and how that trickles down, you know, to the skill positions. Now, another interesting nugget over the weekend was on the offensive line as far as coaching. We know the Broncos, you know, the struggles they endured on the O-line really for the last 2 years, but especially in 2016. We knew there was zero chance that Clancy Barone was going to be retained. He, along with Rick Dennison and Greg Knapp, was let go. The Broncos went out and hired Jeff Davidson to coach the big boys up front. Now, of course, Davidson worked under McCoy in San Diego. He's a former offensive lineman himself, played four seasons from 90 to 93 with the Denver Broncos. And he began his coaching career as an assistant with the Saints, you know, kind of going through his track record. He's bounced around to 6 different teams. This will be his 7th NFL team. And Davidson's teams have featured top 8 rushing attacks, get this, in 6 of his last 8 seasons and 7 times overall. Now, additionally, he's been part of 6 teams that have finished in the NFL's top 10 in fewest sacks allowed. So you've got prolific production on the ground, plus keeping their quarterback upright under Davidson. Another good thing about him is his offensive line has paved the way for 6 different running backs to have combined for 9 individual 1,000-yard rushing campaigns, including 1 2,000-yard campaign. You look at this guy's track record. Of course, they also hired John Benton, Luke, to serve as Davidson's assistant on the O-line. But this is a track record that is impressive, and it makes me wonder, you know, you got on one hand with McCoy, Davidson, you know, they're more power scheme type of guys. But then you bring in a guy like John Benton, who worked under Gary Kubiak in Houston for several years. Maybe they want to keep the zone system around. Talk about your gut reaction to the offensive line coaching hires, Luke.
Yeah, so to me, this kind of just seems like a trend overall in what they're looking to do is, you know, McCoy, as you said, he's really a chameleon as a coach. Musgrave has worked with a lot of different players and found success in his system. And now you're bringing in, you know, a zone blocking guy, sure, but also a power scheme coach. To me, it seems like they want all kinds of influences and they really want to be as diverse as possible in what they're able to run. So I'm a huge fan of cross-training players among schemes and positions. I really think that it's valuable to have, you know, linebackers going through defensive line and secondary drills, for instance, on defense. So for them to be able to cross-train guys through multiple schemes and, you know, blocking systems, I think is extremely important to create a very well-rounded offense. And this is an offense that lacks refinement in so many areas. Right. You know, it's kind of just like, well, let's throw the sink at them and let's see what we can get out.
You also got to look at the implications of these hires on the actual offensive linemen, and specifically the guys that John Elway has drafted over the last few years. You know, you've got, of course, Matt Paradis is the one shining example of Elway hitting on a draft pick, O-line draft pick. But you've got Michael Schofield, the former third rounder, Ty Sambrylo, second rounder, Max Garcia, fourth rounder. All three of those guys, especially Sambrylo and Garcia, have had their ups and downs. The biggest thing is consistency. With Ty Sambrylo, I'd be surprised if he even is on the roster come training camp, to be honest with you. Or I should say I wouldn't be surprised if he wasn't, because as a second-round pick, that's a pretty hefty investment the team has in him. But, Luke, what do you think the implications are with these coaching hires as it relates to Denver's homegrown talent and, you know, pushing them forward farther down the development curve?
Well, when it comes to the offensive line, you've got a guy in Max Garcia who's pretty much built for the power scheme. So he should thrive, absolutely thrive in this power scheme. And then you kind of look along the line, Ty Sambrylo doesn't really fit in power. I mean, he barely fits in zone.
Yeah, he doesn't fit anywhere.
No, Michael Schofield barely fits in zone. He's not much of a power guy either. And you kind of go from there. Paradis, I think he could hold his own in power, but he's just so undermatched, and he's going to be asked to, you know, turn guys a lot in that kind of scheme. So it's going to kind of go from there. I really think that this team right now is built for a zone scheme, and it's going to be awkward and uncomfortable for them to transition to a predominantly power-based scheme at first, but that's just because of who they have chosen to put on this roster right now.
Now, as mentioned, everybody – essentially on the Gary Kubiak offensive staff were dismissed, with the exception of two guys: wide receivers coach Tyke Tolbert and running backs coach and former interim head coach Eric Studisville. Now, both guys had opportunities elsewhere around the league, but they chose to remain in Denver. Now, Tolbert, of course, has been instrumental to Demaryius Thomas and Emmanuel Sanders producing three consecutive 1,000-yard seasons as a duo. And in his time in Denver, Studisville's coached two guys, Willis McGahee and C.J. Anderson, to Pro Bowl berths, while also helping Knowshon Moreno surpass 1,000 yards on the ground, the only time in his career, in 2013. Do you like the decisions, though, Luke, to retain these two guys who clearly have some pretty deep roots with the Broncos players on the roster currently?
Right. Well, when you bring in a lot of new coaches, it's important to hold over some old coaches. And I think Eric Studisville in particular is really a top-notch coach in this league. I think he'll be destined for an offensive coordinator position not too far down the road. I shouldn't be surprised. Obviously, he served as an interim head coach for four games several years ago. He's done great work with the running backs. And really, this year has kind of been the aberration to the trend. I mean, he turned C.J. Anderson from an undrafted free agent into, you know, a 1,000-yard back pretty much. And I think, you know, I think that gets overlooked sometimes.
He did. CJ, that year he did make the Pro Bowl, 2014, had more than 1,000 yards from scrimmage in the final eight games of the year, plus double-digit touchdowns combined. So, yeah, good. I think just for the sake of comfort and some continuity, it's good to have those guys back. Now, listen, one of the benefits we have at the Locked On Podcast Network is the opportunity to work closely with our advertising partners. We enjoy taking the time on our show to talk about these partners and to help them reach new people. These are companies that we believe in. It's not something that we take lightly, because it can be a very powerful thing, and we're always looking to grow our relationships. Now, listen to this. According to a study from the Interactive Advertising Bureau and Edison Research, consumers are highly likely to purchase from podcast sponsors. Go figure. According to the survey of 1,000 podcast listeners, nearly two-thirds, 65% of them, were more willing to consider purchasing products and services they learned about during a podcast. 60% added that given equal price and quality, they prefer to purchase from companies that advertise on their favorite podcast. So if you're listening to this show as a business owner, that's some powerful data. And if you'd like to reach specifically the male demographic between the ages of 18 and 44, your company should be sponsoring this podcast, because 98% of the Locked On Broncos listenership is male, 80% of which are between the ages of 18 to 44. A lot of digits there. But our rates are very reasonable. Feel free to reach out to us at lockedonbroncos@gmail.com, and we can talk about it. Now, Luke, if you look back at the Broncos' recent history, with the exception of 2013, where they were plagued, I guess you could say, by injuries, especially going into that playoff stretch, they've been remarkably healthy other than that season. Heading down the stretch, more often than not, the Broncos have been at relative full strength late in the year, and that's due to strength and conditioning coach Luke Richeson, who's been with the Broncos since 2012. John Elway and Vance Joseph, they did the smart thing, Luke, and decided to retain Richeson moving forward, and I think that's key.
Yeah, I completely agree. I mean, I've spoken before about, you know, how I feel about other teams and their kind of respective strength and conditioning programs. But I really think that in this case, you've got a guy in Richeson who's an upper tier guy, certainly in the league. Steve Antonopoulos is obviously, I think, a big part of that. And, you know, you look across the division at the now Los Angeles Chargers with, I think it was like over 16 or 18 guys on IR to end the year.
Mm-hmm.
That's a lot. You know, you can't win games with that in the NFL.
Certainly played a role in McCoy's struggles over the last couple of years of his tenure with the Chargers. Now, one of the last pieces to the puzzle for Vance Joseph and John Elway was a defensive coordinator. Wade Phillips, of course, took a job with the L.A. Rams after the Broncos had decided they did not want to make him the highest-paid defensive coordinator in the league. Now, Phillips took a deal that's going to pay him more than $2 million per year, I'm told. Okay. No way was John Elway going to pay that, especially with the personnel the Broncos have, and then, of course, having Joe Woods waiting in the wings. And even though the team has yet to officially announce it, Nikki Jabvala, a wonderful beat reporter for the Denver Post, reported on Sunday that the Broncos will promote Woods to defensive coordinator. Now, of course, Woods has coached Denver's defensive backs for the last 2 years, and in both of those seasons, the Broncos finished number one in the league in passing defense. He has 13 years of experience coaching in the NFL, all of which have been with defensive backs. And now, of course, the 46-year-old Joe Woods is going to succeed Wade Phillips as the defensive coordinator of what is the most feared defense in the NFL. Your thoughts on Woods succeeding the son of Bum, Luke?
Well, as a defensive backs coach, you know, having one just get a head coach job and another one just get a defensive coordinator job with Denver, you know, how could I not love it? Joe Woods has done great work with the Denver defensive backs. He's really transformed them. He's brought two guys in rookies in Justin Simmons and Will Parks, who've really gotten a chance to flourish this season and see a lot of on-field play time. So I really think he's a good fit for this job, and I'm really excited to see what he can produce.
Yeah, you look at the season that David Bruton had, you know, his last season in Denver under Joe Woods. You look at Darian Stewart, who was, you know, a former undrafted guy out of South Carolina, kind of bouncing around the league on minimum type deals, and then all of a sudden, you know, he's turned into a Pro Bowl caliber player in Denver, signed a multi-year lucrative contract extension with the Broncos. That can be laid at a guy like Joe Woods' feet. You know, you see Aqib Talib earn his first ever first team All-Pro selection. Chris Harris Jr. as well. So this is a guy who knows what he's doing. It's going to be interesting to see how he performs on game day, especially in terms of calling plays. And I'm sure we're going to talk a lot more about that as we get closer to 2017 season. But Luke, we also learned over the weekend that there was much more to Gary Kubiak's resignation besides health and stress concerns. Now, we know that John Elway and Kubiak disagreed at times this past season over Paxton Lynch's playing time. We know that coming out of the Week 5 loss to Atlanta, when Kubiak suffered that complex migraine condition, that Elway asked Kubiak to take a step back from calling plays to focus more on the big picture stuff. And it's funny because, you know, knowing this new information, if you go back and you listen to Kubiak's farewell speech 2 weeks ago, it all suddenly makes sense. Unfortunately, as Kubiak stated in his goodbye, he's wired to do things one way. And before long, you know, he was back calling plays. Later, after a season of, you know, dismal offensive play, Elway reportedly, and this comes from Bleacher Report's Jason Cole, told Kubiak that he wanted to keep him as the head coach, but wanted to clean house on the offensive coaching staff. He wanted Rick Dennison gone, which he is, Greg Knapp gone, and Clancy Barone gone. We know that Kube, of course, and we've talked about this on the show many times, is loyal to a fault with coaches and players. So, you know, faced with the prospect of firing some of his closest friends, some of these guys have been with him a long time, including especially Dennison, couple decades close to. Instead of doing that, Kubiak chose to hang it up, retire, at least for now. Wouldn't be surprised if he comes back coaching here in a year or two, but it's actually some pretty bombshell stuff, some bombshell revelations. But, Luke, it doesn't come as much of a surprise, really. I mean, it's like the random pieces of a puzzle suddenly clicking into place, and it all makes sense why Kubiak stepped down. I mean, 9-7 is not the end of the world. Now, Elway's got a young, you know, Vance Joseph in the fold who shares his vision. He's got the coaching staff in place to create the offense that Elway's had in his mind. The board is set, but your gut reaction to that stuff that came out over the weekend, Luke?
Well, first of all, it does just make sense. Like, that does line up into what you're expecting here. Elway's always like to have a firm hand in control. You know, that's just the way it is. If he doesn't get his say, he's going to do something about it. And in this case, it was kind of, you know, almost push Gary Kubiak into a suggested kind of retirement mode. I think, to me, the biggest thing that's going to be interesting from this is the roster status of Trevor Siemian. Mm-hmm. Siemian was a huge Kubiak guy. Kubiak wanted him. He drafted him. Elway wanted Lynch. Elway drafted Lynch. With Kubiak not on this roster, I'm going to be very, very intrigued to see what happens with Trevor Siemian first and foremost.
Good point. In fact, it has been surmised, you know, Eric Trickle, Mile High Huddle, brought this up, some stuff he's heard. Wouldn't be surprised if Trevor Simeon's not even on this roster come training camp. Now, that might sound extreme, and, you know, I'll be honest, I haven't tried to follow that up with any of my sources, but even just spitballing, just speculating, you look at you know, the evidence, the empirical data that we're looking at here. Exactly. Yeah, Elway was the final say. He pulled the trigger on taking Siemian kind of as an afterthought to close out that 2015 draft in the seventh round. You know, he does surprisingly well in the preseason as a rookie, coming off an ACL injury his final year at Northwestern. Kubiak likes him. You know, Kubiak's a former late-round guy. Kubiak's a former backup. You know, you have all of that psychology, I guess, if you will, playing into that relationship that was nurtured and cultivated over 2 years. And, you know, it all culminated in Siemian getting the starting nod over Paxton Lynch. And, you know, again, I was of the opinion throughout from July and August on that the Broncos would have been better off just going with Lynch, because more likely than not, the season was going to be a not successful one. You know, we've seen what happens in NFL cities, and look at Denver. When a Hall of Fame caliber quarterback hangs up the cleats, you know, the next year typically isn't going to go well, no matter how many pieces of the puzzle are already on the roster. And in so going with Trevor Siemian, which was a Kubiak thing, you know, they sacrificed Lynch's development and the opportunity to learn with live bullets flying, which is the best way, in my opinion, for a young, especially a high round draft pick quarterback to develop. But, Luke, that's a good point. I mean, what does the future hold for Trevor Siemian? Would you be surprised if the Broncos unloaded him, if they could find a you know, another home for him between now and training camp? Would that shock you?
You know, it really wouldn't shock me, especially if he ends up kind of pushing to get out of town to get a different opportunity. I said, you know, towards the end of the year, we've seen kind of what we have to see from Trevor Siemian, and that is inconsistency is kind of dominated by that. So for him, I think his ceiling is going to be a backup in this league. I think he can be a serviceable backup, but I don't think he's a day one starter. I think he would have a place on the roster for that. But if he's going to be too much of a distraction, I really do think he's going to be on another team.
And that's a good point, too. A lot of the players on the roster bought into Kubiak's message that this is the guy that gives us the best chance to win. They all kind of coalesced around him in that sense, even when times got tough down the stretch and the season kind of fell apart. Do you want that distraction for a young guy? I mean, all these coaching hires, as exciting as they are, one of the top priorities, we can't lose sight of this, is maximizing Paxton Lynch. For the Broncos, they have the skill positions, they have the defense, they have the coaches they believe are in place to take them to the top. But in order for them to compete year in and year out for world championships, they have to have a bona fide franchise quarterback. And Trevor Siemian's not it. He's a guy who, as you say, he's a serviceable backup. He's a guy that you do want on your roster when a starter goes down, whether you need him to finish out a game, step in and start two or three games, keep everything on track. He's that guy. But he's not going to be the difference maker that's going to get you over the hump. He's just not. And maybe at some point in his career he becomes that guy. But from what I've seen over the last year, despite some of the good things he did, and to be honest, in my opinion, the expectations that he exceeded, he's pretty limited as far as his ceiling. The future is Paxton Lynch, Luke, and all these coaching moves are leading to that fact that the Broncos really need him to turn the corner.
Yeah, I completely agree. This is a big year for him, and this is a year when they've kind of concentrated a lot of resources on him. So this is kind of put up or shut up time. It's time to go play some ball and show them what you're capable of.
Well, it's been one heck of an exciting start to the offseason, and we are looking forward to covering the events as they unfold. We didn't even get time to talk about the divisional round playoff games over the weekend, but we'll get to them. On this show, the Denver Broncos come first. Be sure to follow at Locked On Broncos on Twitter. You can find Luke in the Twitterverse at Luke Polglaze and myself at Chad N. Jensen. We want to hear from you, so hit us up. Some of you wanted us to talk about certain things over the weekend. You hit us up. And if we didn't get to your topics, we will as we get farther into the week. Check out the other killer podcasts on the network, Locked On NFL Draft. This time of year, you want to tune in there, as I have been. It's a good show. Locked On NFL with Matt Williamson, great show. Don't forget to subscribe. For Luke, I'm Chad. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
Mile High Huddle.
Hey.